This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the president's legal defense team wraps up its case.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
What we are involved in here, as we conclude, is perhaps the most solemn of duties under our constitutional framework. The trial of the leader of the free world and the duly elected president of the United States. It is not a game of leaks and unsourced manuscripts. That's politics, unfortunately, and Hamilton put impeachment in the hands of this body, the Senate, precisely and specifically to be above that fray.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I have every confidence in your wisdom. You will do the only thing you can do, what you must do, what the Constitution compels you to do. Reject these articles of impeachment for our country and for the American people.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
This should end now as quickly as possible. Ladies and gentlemen, those are the words of White House counsel Pat Cipollone as the president's legal defense team wrapped up its case yesterday in the United States Senate. Welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. I'm Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. And here's where we're at, folks. Both sides have now completed the 3 days that were allotted to them to present their case to the United States senators. Yesterday was just shy of 2 hours. So the White House, the president's legal defense team definitely yielded back some of the time available to them. It included a very forceful closing argument, folks, from our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, acting in his private capacity as counsel to the president. And we are going to play a lot of that sound for you today because, folks, I think it's very important for you to hear the arguments that the president's legal team put before the United States Senate. Very focused on facts, very focused on evidence, filling in the record where the record had previously been made up of hearsay, but a very forceful close yesterday afternoon in the United States Senate. But now we are moving into the next phase of this trial, and I want to explain for you just very quickly in this opening segment what to expect. This is the question and answer phase. You've heard us talk about this in previous days on the broadcast, but there will be a total of 16 hours of available time for the United States senators to question either the House managers or the president's counsel. Now, it's going to be divided into 2 days, so 8 hours today, 8 hours tomorrow, and it's going to look a little bit different than you would expect in a regular courtroom. The senators will have to write their questions down. They will send them to their respective leaders, so either through Leader McConnell or Leader Schumer. Those leaders will have the responsibility of sort of coalescing the questions, maybe eliminating duplicates and getting multiple senators who want to ask the same question onto the same slip of paper. Literally, it'll be written on a slip of paper, folks. Then those papers will be taken to the Chief Justice, and he will read them to either the House managers or the president's counsel. It will go back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans will ask a question, then Democrats will ask a question, and the counsel that it is addressed to will have the opportunity to answer them. Now, the Chief Justice said yesterday from the chair that he was requesting those answers be limited to 5 minutes, as was the custom back in 1999, but he also admitted that as it was in 1999, that time frame likely will not be held to very specifically. But roughly speaking, that is what he has requested the sides respond in. After that, folks, there will be the much discussed debate about additional witnesses. But as we've been doing all along, we're going to take this one phase at a time. So first of all, what we're going to do is we're going to recount what happened yesterday as the president's team wrapped up their case. And then we're going to look ahead to this question and answer phase. I would leave you with this, though. Reports from the United States Senate yesterday after the president's team wrapped up their case. At least three Democrats. Four, if you count Dianne Feinstein, who said something and then tried to take it back when there was a reaction from the left. We'll read those comments to put them into context. But four senators on the Democrat side of the aisle are having questions about the case that was presented by the House managers and are considering a vote to acquit the president of the United States. Folks, we told you this would happen. The House managers put forward their case. It was chock full of holes. The president's team poked those holes, exposed those holes, laid them bare before the United States Senate. And four Democrat senators now have questions about how they are going to vote. Folks, I predict a bipartisan exoneration of the president. But after this break, we're going to play the sound directly to you. You can weigh the evidence for yourself. We'll be back right after this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back into J Secular Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. I'm going to jump right into this, folks, because there is a lot of sound to play for you from yesterday. You know, in a typical broadcast, we maybe don't play as much sound as we have been doing this week. But if you did not catch this live, it's very important for you to hear the summation of the case that was put forward by the president's legal defense team. We did the same when the House managers were presenting. And frankly, we read every word of the transcript of the infamous July 25th call that it forms the foundation of this so-called case. So we want you to hear the direct evidence as it was laid out by the president's team. And so I'm going to play some of the sound for you. I'm going to bring Professor Hutchison and Colonel Smith into the conversation to kind of break it down. And periodically, we will remind you how to follow today's proceedings as well. But I want to start with this. This was very near the opening of our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow's argument yesterday as he took to the floor of the United States Senate to sort of sum up this argument. He spent, I think it was about 45 minutes, maybe close to an hour, walking through the various portions of the case, illustrating why they were flawed and making a final argument to the United States Senate. But I want you to hear this opening. It's about a minute and a half long about what the duty of the United States Senate is and why they were the ones chosen to make this choice. This is Jay Sekulow, Bite One from yesterday.
What we are involved in here, as we conclude, is perhaps the most solemn of duties under our constitutional framework. The trial of the leader of the free world and the duly elected president of the United States. It is not a game of leaks and unsourced manuscripts. That's politics, unfortunately, and Hamilton put impeachment in the hands of this body, the Senate, precisely and specifically to be above that fray. This is the greatest deliberative body on earth. In our presentation so far, you've now heard from legal scholars from a variety of schools of thought, from a variety of political backgrounds. But they do have a common theme, with a dire warning. Danger. 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 To lower the bar of impeachment based on these articles of impeachment would impact the functioning of our constitutional republic and the framework of that Constitution for generations.
Danger, 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 folks. That was Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate. I think it was an appropriate warning for the Senate. We have said on this broadcast many times that this is way bigger than an impeachment effort against President Donald Trump. It is that on its surface, but underneath, it is also a fundamental, an effort to fundamentally change the way impeachment is conducted in the United States and lower the threshold that our framers had in mind for removing a president that was duly elected by the American people. I want to bring Colonel Wes Smith into the conversation here. Colonel Smith, this has really been at the center of the case from day one. You can favor the president. You can disfavor the president. You can be neutral about the president. But undoing the choice of the American people is a very solemn endeavor. It should not be taken lightly. It should not be taken for political reasons. I thought it was very appropriate that Jay started off his argument yesterday making this case to the Senate.
Yeah, it was a powerful argument, you know, and the defense counsel and Jay and the team there, they're doing a great job. But as we said on the broadcast, and as Jay said, this whole impeachment process is a clear and present danger to future presidents and to the separation of powers. And more than that, it's a danger to the values on which our constitutional republic was founded, things like due process and fairness and equal justice under the law, just to name a few. And what strikes me about this is the Democrat managers, they are pretending to be oblivious to these things. You know, most all the ones that are the managers are trained attorneys. You know they know this stuff. But in the name of political expediency, in order to take action against a president they despise for political benefit, they're willing to ignore the warning signs, the danger signs, as Jay called them, that are out there. One of the things also concerning how fraudulent these charges are, we didn't talk about it yesterday, but you know, there were 21 state attorneys general who wrote a letter to the Senate, and I want to read a sentence of what they said. It cannot be a legitimate basis to impeach a president for acting in a legal manner that also may be politically advantageous. That's what they've accused him of, partly. Such a standard would be cause for the impeachment of virtually every president, past, present, and future. The Democrats are playing this crazy game of mind reading that somehow or another they want to know what the president was thinking and feeling when he was actually exercising Article II powers and taking action legitimately and legally as a president. This whole process, then, and I think you agree with me, it's been painful to watch. It really has. The half-truths, the insinuations, the false accusations, the misuse of power, the misuse of the Constitution. I think, like most Americans, we have impeachment fatigue, and the sooner this ends, the better.
Yeah, you don't want to be worn out, though. I agree with you, Wes. It has been painful, but the ramifications are really high. And Professor Dershowitz made the point that you just made a couple of days ago, saying that if this is the standard going forward, you could have impeached virtually every president dating back to George Washington. He went through a list of specific examples. I want to bring Professor Hutchison into the conversation. But, Professor, first of all, I want to play bite two from Jay on the floor of the Senate yesterday, because he gave a little bit of context of what this investigation, what was happening when this investigation started and the impeachment effort began. This is bite two from Jay on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday.
The President of the United States, before he was the President, was under an investigation. It was called Crossfire Hurricane. It was an investigation led by the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. James Comey eventually told the president a little bit about the investigation and referenced the Steele dossier. James Comey, the then director of the FBI, said it was salacious and unverified. So salacious and unverified that they used it as a basis to obtain FISA warrants. Members, managers here, managers at this table right here said that any discussions on the abuse from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act utilized to get the FISA warrants from the court were conspiracy theories. I told you at the very beginning, I asked, do you put yourselves in the shoes of not just this president, of any president? that would have been under this type of attack. FISA warrants issued on people affiliated with his campaign, American citizens affiliated with people of his campaign. Citizens of the United States being surveilled pursuant to an order that has now been acknowledged by the very court that issued the order that it was based on a fraudulent presentation. In fact, evidence specifically changed by the very FBI lawyer who was in charge of this.
Harry, we've talked about each of these issues at length on this broadcast. Crossfire Hurricane, James Comey, the Steele dossier, of course, the FISA order, spying on an American citizen with information they knew could not be dependent on. Jay was right to remind the United States Senate of the context in which this impeachment investigation was launched.
I think that's absolutely correct. So driven by disdain for then-candidate Trump and then-President Trump, as well as disdain for Trump voters, this president has been under continuous investigation by various bureaus of the federal government, the FBI, the intelligence agencies. However, what is missing is evidence that supports these investigations. On the contrary, evidence mounts showing that Democrats actively aided and abetted by their craven allies in the mainstream media keep twaddling toward their own self-created version of Armageddon, and they are quite willing to peddle fictional versions of the transcript. Falsehoods followed by falsifications in order to bring trumped-up charges against a duly elected president of the United States. So what we should note is that when Democrats charge Republicans with malfeasance or misconduct, what we should do instead is investigate the Democrats. Because keep in mind, Hillary Clinton, the DNC, they engaged in their own version of collusion to interfere with the 2016 election, and this impeachment itself constitute evidence that the Democrats are quite willing to interfere with the 2020 election.
Folks, after the break, we'll get back to more sound from yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate. It's time for the American people, for the United States Senate to get back to the work of the American people. More after this break.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. If you're watching us on Facebook or Periscope, during the break, you saw a video talking about some of the political ramifications of this and the fact that the American people are going to the polls in just 9 months, folks, and they're going to the to caucus in Iowa in just 5 days. It's hard to believe. But that the political nature of this, folks, really is at the center of what we've been discussing. And I mentioned this at the outset of the broadcast, but there were, after the president's team rested their case or wrapped up their presentations anyway yesterday, there were at least four Democrat senators who indicated that they are having second thoughts about voting to convict and remove the president this close to the elections. And even though she eventually walked it back, I was maybe most struck by the comments that were made by Senator Dianne Feinstein, who initially said that this is something that the American people should be the judge of, sort of tipping her hat that maybe she thought that this should be taken to the ballot box, that the American voters should decide in November. Now, the reaction to that was very swift and very harsh on the left, and she very quickly put out a statement saying I was misunderstood. That's not what I meant. I'll still be voting to convict, or at least most likely. But folks, I think when she spoke out of her heart, she did reveal that she knows that the American people are the rightful judges of this. This should be taken to the ballot box, and they should be allowed to again render their judgment. Remember, they chose the president in the first place. So if the United States Senate were to remove him, it would be undermining their choice and depriving them of the opportunity to go to the ballot and make the selection again. But as we talk about the impending elections and maybe people inside the chamber who are running for president and who want to oppose President Trump, I want to take Beth's call. She's calling in from Minnesota on line three with a very relevant question, and it's actually something that Jay addressed on the floor of the United States Senate. So, Beth, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, there are four duly elected Democratic senators running for president who will have an opportunity to vote regarding impeachment. Is this not a conflict of interest because they are in fact running against the president, who is also a candidate for president? So isn't there a conflict, and isn't this exactly what the Democrats are stating that the president has done? Interfere with an opponent who is running for office.
Okay, it's a great question, Beth. It's one that's been brought up in Washington, D.C. There are certainly four senators running for president, running for the Democrat nomination, Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, Senator Klobuchar, and Senator Bennett. There are a couple of others who were running, have since gotten out. But it is a question that has been raised specifically by Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, asking whether or not there's a conflict and whether or not they should recuse themselves. Now, it's a little bit similar to a Supreme Court justice, where that would be a decision they alone would make. There's not a procedure for them to recuse themselves. I do think you can make the case that there is a conflict of interest. I don't have any indication that any of the senators is going to do so. However, this was an issue, the political ramifications and the fact that United States senators are in the chamber running against President Trump and also are going to be able to cast a vote on this. It was a topic that Jay raised on the floor of the United States Senate. So I want you to hear how he addressed this issue. This is Bite 3 from Jay yesterday addressing those senators. They were sitting just in front of him. Bite 3.
You are being asked, and I say this with the utmost respect, you are being asked to remove an elected, duly elected president of the United States. This isn't some, we had references to law school exams, and I love the fact that I thought that were great analysis yesterday, and I appreciate all of that. But I want to focus today, or my section, on what you're being asked to do. You are being asked to remove a duly elected president of the United States, and you're being asked to do it in an election year. In an election year. There are some of you in this chamber right now that would rather be someplace else. And that's why we'll be brief. I understand. You'd rather be someplace else. Why would you rather be someplace else? Because you're running for president, the nomination of your party. I get it. But this is a serious deliberative situation. you're being asked to remove a duly elected president of the United States. That's what the articles of impeachment call for, removal.
So there's Jay Sekulow on the floor of the Senate addressing Beth's question. And it's true. There are four senators who are running for president who will be casting a vote on the impeachment of the current sitting question. It brings up an interesting political dynamic. I'll go to Wes Smith for his comments on this, Colonel Smith. I will note, I mean, there's the serious nature of this, which is the most important portion to address, that those four senators better take this responsibility very seriously. But there's also the political component to this. And I'm not so sure Senator Sanders wants to be somewhere else, because actually Joe Biden being out on the trail by himself has actually closed the gap between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Maybe this is why Vice President Biden's schedule was reduced early on, because when he's the only one out there, the attractiveness of him as a candidate actually goes down. But back to the serious point, the one that Jay made on the floor of the Senate, these four senators, Wes, they certainly have to set aside personal political interest in order to cast this very serious vote.
Yeah, and I sincerely hope that they're capable of that. There has been so much blatant, I mean, unapologetic political bias from the Democratic Party through this entire process, beginning last fall, continuing through this week, till I don't know if they can do that or not. On the other hand, you mentioned a bit ago that there are four Democratic senators that are thinking about voting for acquittal. And when I read that this morning and I heard you mention it again, I mean, we're realists on this show. We follow politics. I understand political expediency. Politicians, by their very nature, do things that help them out politically. But I'd like to think, with these four Democrat senators who might vote to acquit, that perhaps integrity and a deep sense of fairness is at play in their minds. And I am truly encouraged at the prospects that might be the case. Either way, the president is going to be acquitted, you know, as we all know. But as far as the other Democrats there, other than the four that might be having doubts, I think they also know there's no way Donald Trump's going to be removed from office. There will not be a conviction. Their motive at this point is to inflict as much political battle damage as they can prior to the November election. And that's sort of a sad commentary in light of the fact of how serious and somber this whole process is.
So the four senators you mentioned, Senator Joe Manchin, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, Senator Doug Jones, Senator Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein has walked it back since. So the other three, I guess, are still seriously considering a vote to exonerate. Quite frankly, there ought to be 100 senators who are presuming innocence. That's where you have to start when the American people have elected a president. You have to start at innocence, and then you have to be convinced based on the evidence, not based on hearsay, not based on political ideology or policy disputes. You have to be convinced to change that vote. There ought to be 100 senators that start at that point. Folks, when we get back from the break, we're going to play more sound from Jay Sekulow from yesterday on the floor of the Senate. We're also going to look ahead at the question and answer phase, which begins here in just about 30 minutes. 16 hours of questions time available for both Republicans and Democrats. It will be presented on a piece of paper to the Chief Justice. He will read it to the parties, and they will have approximately 5 minutes to respond. That will take today and tomorrow. And then, folks, we could be moving to a conclusion. The American people could only hope, in the words of Pat Cipollone, this should end now as quickly as possible. We'll be back after this break.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Going to jump right in here, trying to play as much sound for you from Jay Sekulow on the floor of the Senate from yesterday as possible in the show. I do want to play for you at the end of the broadcast his powerful close, but I'm going to jump right into this. I want to play for you. It's Bite 5 from Jay yesterday, talking about what's at the crux of the witness testimony. And it's basically that just there's a policy disagreement between the unelected bureaucrats and the duly elected president of the United States. Here's Jay explaining it to the senators. Bite 5.
We've given you, and our approach has been to give an overview and to be very specific. To remove a duly elected president, which is what you're being asked to do, for, in essentially, policy disagreements. You heard a lot about policy. Although the one that it still troubles me. This idea that the president, it was said by several of the managers, is only doing these things for himself. Understanding what is going on in the world today as we're here. They raised it, by the way. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. They raised it. This president is only doing things for himself while the leaders of opposing parties, by the way, at the highest level, to obtain peace in the Middle East, to say you're only doing that for yourself. I think the irony of that those statements were made while all of that was going on, and other acts that this body's passed, some of it bipartisan, to help the American people. Policy differences. Those policy differences cannot be utilized to destroy the separation of powers. House manager spoke for, I know we've had disagreements on the time, if it was 21 hours or 23 hours. They spoke during their time, a lot of time. Most of it attacking the president, policy decisions. They didn't like what they heard. They didn't like there was a pause on foreign aid. I'd laid out before that there was pauses on all kinds of foreign aid. It's not the first president to do it.
Policy disputes and policy differences. I want to go to our director of policy, Harry Hutchison. Harry, we've talked about this before, but when it comes to making certifications on the release of foreign aid, there are all sorts of statutory delegations to the executive branch, and ultimately, a bureaucrat can make any decision they want on that authority. It ultimately rests on the authority of the chief executive, the president of the United States, who's the boss, who the first line of Article 2 gives the authority of the executive branch to make those certifications. So it really does boil down to policy disputes. Harry, the unelected bureaucrats did not agree with the elected president.
That is precisely correct. And they then ran, directly or indirectly, to the House of Representatives. They ignored their duty as a member of the executive branch. And under our constitutional system, it is clear beyond question that what we have is a unitary executive. So all executive power is absorbed into the hands, into the mind of the president of the United States, and that is pursuant to Article 2 of the United States Constitution. So at the end of the day, the president of the United States gets to set policy, not some unelected bureaucrat who's gone perhaps to an elite school, who disdains America First policy. And so at the end of the day, any policy dispute should be settled in favor of President Trump, and we should not listen to these unelected bureaucrats. It does not matter what their opinion was. Their opinion at the end of the day is, in the words of Jerry Nadler, no more than nonsense.
Yeah, the distinction is important. The Foreign Service apparatus may have favored the aid, but nobody elected the Foreign Service apparatus. They serve the President of the United States, and the President campaigned consistent with this careful criteria of releasing foreign aid. Ultimately, he is the President. He makes the final decision, and then he goes back to the American people and either reaps the benefit, political benefits, or pays the political price. That's the way the framers intended it.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. For those who were watching on Facebook during the break, we played just a snippet of the closing argument that Jay made on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday. At the end of his presentation, he gave a quick summation of the facts that were at play, of the sober duty that now rests on the United States Senate, and of the framework that they should view this through, that they should look through the lens of in order to make this judgment. And I want to play for you. I said I was going to play it at the end of the broadcast, but I want to do it right now, because folks, this is really what I want to be left in your mind from what Jay said to the Senate yesterday. It's a little bit lengthy. It's about 2.5 minutes, but it makes the case very clearly of how the United States Senate, each one of these senators, all 100 of them, should be looking at this case. This is Bite 17, the closing remarks yesterday from Jay Sekulow on the floor of the Senate.
We've laid out, I believe, a compelling case on what the Constitution requires. When they were in the House of Representatives putting this together, did they go through a constitutionally mandated accommodations process to see if there was a way to come up with something? No, they did not. Did they run to court? No. And the one time it was about to happen, they ran the other way. Separation of powers means something. It's not separation of powers and other nonsense. If we've reached now, at this very moment, in the history of our republic, a bar of impeachment because you don't like the president's policies or you don't like the way he undertook those policies, because we hear a lot about policies. If partisan impeachment is now the rule of the day, which these members and members of this Senate said should never be the rule of the day, my goodness, they said it, some of them, 5 months ago. But then we had the national emergency. A phone call. It's an emergency. Except we'll just wait. But if partisan impeachment based on policy disagreements, which is what this is, and personal presumptions, or newspaper reports and allegations in a unsourced, maybe this is in somebody's book, who's no longer at the White House, if that becomes the new norm, future presidents, Democrats, Republicans, will be paralyzed the moment they are elected, before they can even take the oath of office. The bar for impeachment cannot be set this low. Majority Leader McConnell, Democratic Leader Schumer, House managers, members of the Senate. Danger, danger, danger. These articles must be rejected. The Constitution requires it. Justice demands it.
Folks, the close was obviously very powerful. He said the articles must be rejected. The Constitution requires it. Justice demands it. But a couple sentences prior, I think you got the core of the argument where he said future presidents, Democrats, Republicans, will be paralyzed the moment they are elected before they can even take the oath of office. The bar for impeachment cannot be set this low. And folks, I don't think it's overstating the case to say to defend the integrity of the American voters, you have to maintain a high threshold for impeachment. We've had a lot of situations where the president has been controlled by one party and both chambers of Congress are controlled by the other. If this is where we're going to set the bar for impeachment, every future time we have that scenario, we are going to be right on the precipice of those two chambers impeaching a president that the American people chose just because he or she is of the opposite party. I think Jay was right to say danger, danger, danger. The Constitution requires that these articles be rejected. I think it was a powerful close. I do want to go back to the phones real quick before we play a little bit more sound from Jay on the floor of the Senate. Lynn is calling in with, I think, what is an important question, probably one on the minds of a lot of people. She's calling from Pennsylvania. Lynn, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, what kind of questions are the senators allowed to ask? Can they ask cross-examination questions, like more about the whistleblower and Adam Schiff's connection, or only clarification questions on the information that was presented?
That's a good question, Lynn. Here's how it's going to work. There are really no requirements on what the senators can ask. I think probably the ones who are taking this the most responsibly will ask questions that probably are based in the record, that maybe are a bit of a cross-examination. You know, questions that say, I heard this, but then I also read a report like this, or the evidence suggests this. Can you clarify what the difference is? But in all reality, because this is a political process, because these are senators who have been elected and have to go back to the voters to be reelected, they can ask just about any question they want. Now, the leaders of both chambers are going to be compiling these questions and kind of looking for similarities. So you might see some refining that happens at that stage. But ultimately, if there's a disagreement, an individual senator would be able to write a question as he or she wants it and ultimately get it to the Chief Justice to read, assuming there was enough time. But I'll go to Colonel Smith on this. I think there's going to be a wide-ranging questions here, Wes. I think some of them are going to be on the record. And quite frankly, I expect maybe some of them will sound political, Wes, but also will be very, very relevant because there are former political figures and current political figures who actually maybe have conducted themselves in a way that deserve the scrutiny of the United States Senate.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right. And I'm hopeful that the questions, partly because there is it's limited in how they can ask them. They can't grandstand. They can't get up in front of their desk with a microphone. It has to go through the Chief Justice. So I'm hopeful that that process in and of itself will add a note of more honest searching as opposed to political games when they ask this question, although there will be some of that as well. You know, I was thinking about what happens as they go into this. And especially as they go into a vote on whether or not to call additional witnesses and ultimately whether or not to acquit the president, the thing that I would love to say to the Democrat senators and to the Republicans, too, for that matter, is just remember that when the Democrat managers came in and presented their case over that painful almost 24-hour period, they attempted to disenfranchise the Senate and to insult them by saying that if they disagreed with the House managers, that somehow they were complicit in this, that they were corrupt and taking part in a cover-up. And I would encourage all 100 senators, just remember that, because that basically is trying to intimidate the jury. But to the caller's question, I think there will be a little bit of political gamesmanship, but by and large, because of how this is set up and the parameters involved, I think most of the senators are honestly looking for more information in order to make an informed decision. At least that's my hope.
I agree with you, Wes, and I hope that's the case as well. Let me get Harry into the conversation here, see what he expects of these questions. I will say this, Harry. I mean, I think there are a couple of folks, and quite frankly, Chairman Schiff is first on my list. His participation in the origins of this case and the context contact that his staff at least had with the whistleblower, I do think that will be brought up during the question and answer period. And quite frankly, you have to look at the origins and the motives of the beginning of this case if you actually want to make a judgment on the final facts. So in my view, those type of questions would be fair game.
I think you're absolutely correct. So among other questions that the senators are likely to ask is, why did the House let up so easily in calling witnesses that they now claim that they need? Keep in mind that the House of Representatives never bothered to take a vote of the House of Representatives as a predicate to subpoenas, as is traditional with respect to subpoenas that are enforceable in court. That's number one. Number two, where is the whistleblower? And how many contacts did the whistleblower have with Adam Schiff and his staff before filing his complaint with the Inspector General of the Intelligence Department? And thirdly, I would want to ask House managers the following question. Did they have any obligation to be truthful in terms of what they put out and what they presented to the United States Senate? I think it's clear beyond question that the House managers fail to insert the entire record of relevant testimony before the United States Senate, and I think the senators are entitled to wonder why not.
Folks, if you're watching us on Facebook or Periscope during the break, you're going to hear more sound from Jay on the floor of the Senate. We just can't get it all into the live broadcast, but this is the message I would give to the United States Senate. You've got two full days here to get the information you need. You are doing a disservice if you are jumping ahead and trying to get people focused in on the ultimate question of whether or not witnesses will be called or what the final vote is. Use these 2 days to look at the evidence, and if you have questions, to ask questions of the counsel. They're right in front of you. We'll be back after this.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. We are privileged to be joined right now by our executive director, Jordan Seculo, a member of the president's legal defense team. Jordan, powerful closing from your team yesterday. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to question and answers ahead. Give us an update.
Well, I think, you know, this is two potential days, two eight-hour days, 16 hours total of questions. It goes Republican question, so from a Republican Senate or a group of senators to, and then a Democrat senators, but that doesn't mean that it may not be posed to the same side. So you may have to answer three or four questions in a row, and then not answer questions for a little bit, and then the other side answers three or four questions in a row. And so it's back and forth between the Republicans and Democrat senators' questions. That's what they, but not back and forth between who it is posed to. So, again, some of them will be the Democrats giving, you know, I'd expect the Adam Schiff more time to kind of get a rebuttal. But, I mean, you will not have to hear Adam Schiff for 30 minutes at a time today. You might have to hear a lot from him, but you won't be hearing from him for extended periods or from our team. These are 5 minutes or less, and that most can be answered hopefully in about 3 minutes is the hope from the Chief Justice, the Majority Leader, and that was the same standard under the Clinton impeachment. So it's a long day. I mean, it's an 8 hour day, but it does have kind of an endpoint at nine. It looks like 8 hours and 8 hours is the split we're looking at. And then we really, tomorrow, it's up to the Senate if they want to take all of their time. I'd expect they take their time today. I don't know if they'll go all 8 hours again then tomorrow. We don't know, but our team's ready. We're confident. We like this portion where we get to answer the senators' questions who have had to be silent. And remember, they don't get to ask. They do get to ask, but they write them down. They submit them to the Chief Justice. He then reads them out. So they're still pretty quiet, but it does give us an opportunity to answer directly what's on their minds. And I think that's good for us as the legal team who made our presentation. Now, what else would you like to know? What else would you like us to kind of focus in on, hone in on, and just kind of, or if you just got a quick yes or no, you know, kind of question. And so that's what we're heading into today. I think it'll be pretty interesting for those who are watching. And of course, the news will clip out the most unique questions, I'm sure. But it is, again, it's that we're moving towards that next stage. This will likely last 2 days. And then there will be the vote. The first vote will be on whether or not there'll be witnesses on likely. I guess we're looking at a Thursday potentially on that. So. Just quickly, I think, hey, Dad, you want to join real quick on the show? You want to join real quick? Say hello? All right, 1 second, Dan. I'm walking through a room back here.
Hey, pretty great to have Jay and Jordan joining us, guys.
Hey, Dan, and everybody that's listening, we appreciate, I know you all are thinking about us and praying for our team. Continue to do that. We've got, as Jordan said, 2 days of questioning, so about 16 hours. So it's going to go late into the night, probably 9 or 10 o'clock tonight and tomorrow. Friday will be the witness interviews. And then when that happens, it could be over this weekend if there's no witnesses, but we'll see what happens. That's going to be up to the Senate. We're going to make an aggressive argument, regarding those issues, and we'll have questions and answers today that will go well into the evening. So with that, Dan, I'm turning it back to you.
Great. Thanks, Jay. Guys, it's been it's just been incredible to have Jay and Jordan joining us when they can from the floor of the Senate. I'm very grateful to Jordan. He's been able to call in just about every day. And I can tell you, they're going around the clock right now, folks, just preparing for the question and answers that are ahead. I know neither one of them has had a ton of sleep. They've been doing an incredible job on the floor of the Senate. I'm grateful that Jordan's calling in. It was a lot of fun to have Jay be able to jump on there. You're not going to get that anywhere else, folks. And I'm just appreciative. I want to do something here. I'm going to go to Wes real quickly to get his reaction to Jay and Jordan's comments. And then I want to close the broadcast by playing again the closing argument from Jay. I actually want to end off with that because I think it was the right tone to leave the Senate with. I think it's the right tone to leave you all with today as you look forward to questions. But Wes, as you listen to Jay and Jordan talk about just being minutes away here from going back on the floor of the Senate and responding to these questions, I'm grateful that they are where they are because quite frankly, the stakes of this trial are very high.
Yeah, the stakes could not be higher. And their own sense, they're certainly capable. They've done an excellent job defending the president. But their sense of humility, they're seeking the prayers of people, you know, to pray for them as they go through this, I think speaks volumes about who they are and what they are about over these next 2 days.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Folks, We've got about a minute left before I'm going to pitch to a piece of sound that's going to take about 2 minutes. It will take us right up to the close of the broadcast. We played it for you earlier, but this is the moment that I want everyone to make sure that they have heard. It's Jay summing up the case on the floor of the Senate, running through just the top line issues that are at play that the senators have to consider, and then leaving them with the ramifications of their vote. There really is real danger. You can not like the president if you want, but this is not just about removing the current president. It's about whether or not our way of government and the sacredness of the American vote is going to be preserved. He chose to close with this passage. I think it's appropriate that we close today's broadcast with it. So I'm going to let it play in its entirety. It's going to take us to the very end of the show. And I want you to listen to it in its entirety because the end tells you exactly what is at play here. Again, this is our chief counsel acting in his private capacity on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday, Jay Sekulow, Byte 17.
We've laid out, I believe, a compelling case on what the Constitution requires. When they were in the House of Representatives putting this together, did they go through a constitutionally mandated accommodations process to see if there was a way to come up with something? No, they did not. Did they run to court? No. And the one time it was about to happen, they ran the other way. Separation of powers means something. It's not separation of powers and other nonsense. If we've reached now, at this very moment, in the history of our republic, a bar of impeachment, because you don't like the president's policies or you don't like the way he undertook those policies, because we hear a lot about policies. If partisan impeachment is now the rule of the day, which these members and members of this Senate said should never be the rule of the day. My goodness, they said it, some of them, 5 months ago. But then we had the national emergency. A phone call. It's an emergency. Except we'll just wait. But if partisan impeachment based on policy disagreements, which is what this is, and personal presumptions, or newspaper reports and allegations in a unsourced, maybe this is in somebody's book, who's no longer at the White House, if that becomes the new norm, future presidents, Democrats, Republicans, will be paralyzed the moment they are elected, before they can even take the oath of office. The bar for impeachment cannot be set this low. Majority Leader McConnell, Democratic Leader Schumer, House Managers, members of the Senate. Danger, danger, danger. These articles must be rejected. The Constitution requires it. Justice demands it.
These articles must be rejected. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.